Hi, I'm Terry Marr. Welcome to Traveling on Chris. For the next half hour, we'll feature travel tips and articles from a variety of publications. And I believe today we can conclude the 36 hours itineraries for a weekend outing or a stop along the way we've done for the last couple of weeks. It's from the New York Times via the Hartford Current. And we'll start with Cartagena, Colombia. Cartagena de Indias, a colonial port city on Colombia's Caribbean coast, can be so hypnotically hot that visitors may feel as if they were drifting through a dream world of cobblestone lanes and Afro-Colombian drumbeats. A weekend is perfect for a robust introduction through two adjacent walkable neighborhoods. The old town is still surrounded by the stone walls built by the Spanish colonists, who also left behind opulent mansions and churches. Neighboring Gestimani is an artsy, semi-residential enclave with a popular street party scene, overlooked by the 16th-century fortress that looms on a hill nearby. And if the heat does get to you, order a limonada de coco, slushy coconut limeade that keeps coastal Colombians deliciously cool. This is by Shannon Sims. Friday, 3 p.m., snack your way around. Kick off a visit with a walking tour through the city's connected Old Town and Gestimani neighborhoods, the triangular heart of the city between the Caribbean Sea and San Lazaro Lagoon. Several groups offer free walking tours departing from the egg-yolk-colored main gate and clock tower called the Puerta del Reloj, the original entrance into the walled city. For a more curated experience, Cartagena Connections adapts guided tours of visitors' interests such as architecture, history, or photography. Popular street food tour includes stops to taste wedges of salted green mango, corn arepas filled with cheese and mamoncillo, a local lychee-like fruit. 5 p.m., stroll and spot a sloth. Some of Cartagena's most exquisite moments are impromptu scenes found when strolling aimlessly through the old town's narrow streets, past bougainvillea-covered colonial buildings and palm tree-studded squares. Walk through Parque del Centenario, a compact park that is home to monkeys and sloths. Stop by several shops within walking distance. Ivoc makes chocolates infused with Amazonian fruits. Abaco Libros y Café offers a cozy world of books and coffee. St. Dom has chic Colombian designer clothes and jewelry. Loto del Sur has soaps and lotions used in some of Colombia's finest boutique hotels. And Silvia Terrassi has colorful lawn dresses. Stop by El Centro Artesano Guazuma for crafts like baskets woven by indigenous women from the Guapi area of Colombia's western coast. 6 p.m. Watch the sunset. Perch on top of history by watching the sunset on the famous walls or Las Morales that surround the old town. King Philip III of Spain ordered the nearly 7 miles of thick stone walls built after the British privateer Francis Drake captured and plundered Cartagena in 1586. The walls, along with the port and San Felipe de Barajas Castle, have been recognized by UNESCO as one of the most extensive examples of military architecture in the Western Hemisphere. Near the westernmost stretch of the wall, the sun descends right over the Caribbean. Many visitors join a long queue here to watch from Café Del Mar, a restaurant beside the wall. The local people often enjoy the sunset for free and without the line by finding a spot on the wall's warm stones, a practice they jokingly call murallando or walling. 8 p.m. Taste the Caribbean. Mar is Yellow is a picturesque restaurant hidden inside a colonial mansion in the center of the old town. On one floor, the open kitchen faces a wall of tropical plants and a moody open-air bar. Up another set of stairs, a lush rooftop awaits for a starlit meal. Diners can try dishes with regional ingredients like stewed goat, croquettes of jaiba, a typical crab found along the Colombian coast, or to drink a frozen, magenta-colored corozo juice made from the tart, cherry-like local fruit. 9:30 p.m., revel in the Old Town. After dark, the Old Town is a cacophony of hawkers, street performers, and horse-drawn carriages. Skip, the animals are often not well-treated. Prostitutes also frequent the area. Be advised that sex trafficking has been exacerbated by instability in neighboring Venezuela. Despite these realities, the old town in the evening is well-lit, beautiful, and busy. Start at the Plaza de San Diego on the wall of the city's eastern end, where vendors sell souvenirs and snacks like carimañolas, fried yuca dough stuffed with meat. Then swing by Alquimico, a three-level party palace with a rooftop dance floor. Maybe a line to enter, but usually no cover charge. Farther west, on the Plaza de San Pedro Clavar, El Baron covers Latin America's finest spirits paired with cigars from across the region. Saturday, 8 a.m. Start with local coffee. Colombia is one of the world's biggest coffee producers, so no visit is complete without tasting a local brew. Head to the Getsemani neighborhood, a funkier and a good way version of Old Town, and just a short walk away to find Libertario Coffee Roasters. Experiment with an infinitely customizable menu of Java, then purchase bags of beans and big bottles of cold brew to take home. The windows at the bar counter open onto the bustling neighborhood, whose walls are covered in street art. At night, the scene is very different, but in the early morning, a soft sea breeze winds its way through the still uncrowded streets. 9 a.m., climb a castle. On a hill near Getsemani, looming powerfully over Cartagena, is San Felipe de Barajas Castle, a mandatory stop for comprehending the scale and brutality of Spanish colonial power and the city's importance in Latin American history. Visitors to the 16th century fortress, which was built by enslaved Africans, can walk through its warren of eerily lit underground tunnels. On the fort's eastern side, a 21-minute animated film retells the site's bloody battles in Spanish with English captions. While the process can be a bit disorganized, guides at the site offer private or group tours in English. For visitors with mobility limitations, note that it can be a hot 10-minute walk uphill to reach the fort, and once there, some parts are accessible only by stairs, rainwater. 11:30 a.m., squeeze in the dining. The Petit Sambal on a busy Getsemani street is easy to miss, but a neat traveler's find. Its narrow space belies a full-throttle menu of well-presented takes on local favorites, including ceviche topped with fried squid and oxtail tacos. Service is attentive, but the ambiance is low-key. Don't skip the sour sop cheesecake, one of the restaurant's creative flavor combinations. 1 p.m., shop at a bullring. La Sarazuela, on the eastern end of the Old Town in an area called San Diego, is a shopping mall that has been seen plenty of heart-pumping excitement. Constructed in 1893, it originally served as the town's central theater and bullfighting arena. In 2019, a modern shopping mall was grafted onto the old wood and stone coliseum-like structure. Inside, find pieces from many of Colombia's most coveted fashion brands. Reversible bikinis at Majai, leather weekender bags at Sabandija, and crisp menswear at Victor del Peral. Open-air patios throughout offer views across the town's wetlands, and the former bullfighting floor is now the food court, from which you can still see the arena benches. 5 p.m., rooftop hop. Don't be inside during a Cartagena sunset. You can take a rooftop dance class set to local champeta music, an Afro-Colombian-influenced genre also called la terapia, the therapy, taught by local people through the group Black Legacy Experiences. There are many rooftop hotel bars in the Old Town to watch the sunset from as well. Mirador Gastro Bar at Hotel Torre del Relo has an up-close view of the city's iconic clock tower, which is breathtaking when lighted at night. Movich Hotel's rooftop is one of the highest, with vast views from the infinity pool over the Old Town and to the Caribbean Sea beyond. Sofia Hotel has one of the larger rooftop pools and offers a view of San Pedro Claver Church, named for the Jesuit priest Peter Claver, who is considered the saint of slaves. Both pools are only open at hotel guests, or to hotel guests. 8:30 p.m., book a hot table. Salil, an intimate restaurant on a calm Getsemani backstreet, feels like a visit to someone's home, with simple wooden tables, earth tones, and exposed rafters. But the familial appearance is deceiving, as Salil stands head and shoulders above Cartagena's other restaurants. What started as a pop-up project around 2016 focused on resuscitating historic recipes with organic and local ingredients is now the most coveted seat in town. The chef Jaime Rodriguez captures Cartagena's juncture between South America and the Caribbean in meticulously presented dishes. Smoked fish is covered in colorful flower petal, quote, scales, unquote. A coconut sorbet is served in a pomelo nearly the size of a soccer ball. Reservations are essential. 10:30 p.m. Explore nightlife. Get your bearings and just amid Getsemani's exploding nightlife at the Plaza de la Trinidad, a rounded church-anchored plaza popular with skateboarders, vendors selling skewers of meat, and roving rappers who create unsolicited rhymes for tips. Roll down the colorful Calle del Pozo to reach the pedestrian-only lanes, colloquially known as, quote, wide alleyway and narrow alleyway, unquote, Callejón Ancho and Callejón Angosto. In the evening, tourists and local people cluster at plastic tables and lean against door frames, out of which some residents sell beer and rum drinks. When you're ready to dance, walk a couple of blocks to Café Havana for a night of twirling around a central bar surrounded by black and white portraits of salsa's greatest musicians. Sunday, 10:30 a.m., recover with brunch. After a night of dancing, a late and lazy brunch hits the spot come Sunday morning. Townhouse Hotel's rooftop in the Old Town merges Latin American flavors with bottomless mimosas and Bloody Marys, and a DJ and plunge pool keep the party going. A block away, the no-frills Café de la Mañana offers a much more relaxed breakfast escape inside a cute whitewashed home. There's only about a dozen tables, but the menu ranges from healthy picks like muselli with fruit juice to a more hearty plate of chorizo and arepas. He stops. The UNESCO-designated Old Town, Cartagena's inner walled city, merges historical architecture with modern shops and restaurants and is often compared to Old San Juan or the French Quarter in New Orleans. Salil is a rising star restaurant in the Getsemani neighborhood that serves elegantly presented Colombian Caribbean dishes. San Felipe de Barajas Castle is a 16th century fortress on a rocky crag overlooking the city. La Sarzuela is a former bull ring and theater that has been reimagined as a shopping mall packed with local design boutiques. Washington. At times, Washington can feel like a tale of two cities, politicians and temporary dwellers versus multi-generational residents fighting to hold on to their piece of the district. Washington has seen its demographics shift dramatically in recent decades, bringing both positive and negative effects of gentrification. Second phase of a $3.6 billion development of the Wharf District has contributed a new Pendry luxury hotel and splashy dining destinations, all against the backdrop of increased crime and ongoing questions of cultural identity. But Washington is still a hub of art, history, and social justice leadership, and is home to many of the best free museums and monuments of the world. Shayla Martin with this. Friday, 4:30 p.m., cruise the monument. Some may write it off as a cheesy tourist activity, but more Washingtonians could benefit from a relaxing sunset cruise of the Potomac River. Parting from the revitalized Wharf District, city experiences bright yellow water taxis head out five times a day for the monuments tour from the wharf. The 1.5-hour round-trip tour with audio narration covers sights too difficult to see on foot in one weekend. Frederick Douglass Memorial Bridge, the Washington Monument, the Lincoln Memorial, the behemoth John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts, the notorious Watergate Complex, and the Georgetown Waterfront. 6:30 p.m., shop local, back at the wharf, drop in the Shop Made in D.C., spotlights Washington-based artisans. You'll find 202, the city's area code, and the District versus Congress t-shirts by Balowick Clothing, and tiny onesies covered in cherry blossoms by Marasa Design. Then stroll to Ilili, a Lebanese restaurant on the waterfront with colorful fixtures made in Lebanon, such as dining chairs with hand-sewn floral designs. You'll see local twists on the cuisine, like the hummus that can be topped with Maryland blue crab falafel. Don't miss the fried Brussels sprouts with grapes and mint yogurt, and a plate of riz, Lebanese rice, toasted vermicelli, marcona almonds, and cashews to accompany the heaping mixed grill for two. Book a week ahead. 10 p.m. Sip sake on a rooftop at Moonraker, the rooftop bar at the Pendry Washington, D.C. Hotel. The drinking starts on the way up. On weekend evenings, a host leads guests to the dedicated Moonraker elevator where an elegant beverage cart with self-service, complimentary sake samples, mixed sake beverages, and ochocos, ceramic sake cups, await. At the penthouse level, a stately circular bar serves bites like a spicy tuna roll topped with gold leaf flex and garage-style fried chicken alongside more sake and signature cocktails with Japanese spirits. Saturday, 9 a.m., explore a museum. The Potomac River, which separates Washington from Virginia, may be more famous, but the banks of the Anacostia River is where many local residents go for peaceful waterside views without the National Mall crowds. From Nationals Park, the Major League Baseball Stadium, stroll across the pedestrian-friendly Frederick Douglass Memorial Bridge. It connects the paved Anacostia Riverwalk Trail to Anacostia Park. From there, take a short ride share to the recently renovated Smithsonian's Anacostia Community Museum, free, which shares the stories of everyday people making changes in their communities. 11:30 a.m., tour a historic site. When Turning Natural opened its first location in 2015, it was one of the few health-centric food places to open in Ward 8, a historically underfunded, majority black area known to be a food desert. The business is now a community staple with six locations. Grab a smoothie or a cold-pressed juice, then walk 10 minutes to Cedar Hill, more formally known as the Frederick Douglass National Historic Site, a historic house and estate atop a hill overlooking the city. The abolitionist and orator Frederick Douglass lived here from 1877 until his death in 1895. Join a guided tour led by National Park Rangers to see inside where many of Douglass's original possessions remain, like his collection of fine china and the family piano. 2 p.m. hit a Japanese food hall. Japan and Washington have long had a connection, as the famed cherry trees along the National Mall, a gift from the country in 1912, remind us when they blossom each year. Love, Makoto adds to that relationship. 20,000 square foot Japanese food hall, a quick ride from Anacostia, from the chef Makoto Akua, offers three full-service concepts in deer sushi, an omakase experience, the Love Barbecue, a high-end steakhouse, and Haya Izakaya, a sleek bar serving whiskey highballs and grilled skewers. There's also a fourth fast casual option, a light-filled dining hall called Love on the Run, with touchscreen menus for ordering grab-and-go salad, sushi rolls, ramen bowls, and sandwiches. Try the salmon and avocado roll with yuzu mayo, or the fried chicken sandwich dripping with shiso coleslaw and teriyaki sauce, and serve with fries. 4:30 p.m., go for a mind bender. With so many free museums in Washington, the notion of paying for one night might not immediately appeal. But the Museum of Illusions Washington is a fun, interactive option for all ages amid the history and science-focused institutions. Though the concept exists in more than 40 locations, including Paris, New York, and Madrid, this iteration's 50 mind-bending optical illusions, games, brain teasers feature Washington-specific displays, including a mural of George Washington, whose eyes follow you wherever you walk, and the Instagram-friendly reverse room, where you appear to stroll on the ceiling of a metro car. In the tilted room, you can lean almost as far as Michael Jackson in the Smooth Criminal video, and in the vortex tunnel, swirling lights trick you into thinking the floor is moving. 7 p.m., dine with a son of Spain. Since starting his first restaurant, Paleo, in Washington 30 years ago, the chef Jose Andres has opened another 36 establishments and created the nonprofit World Central Kitchen, which has served millions of meals to the needy. Mr. Andres is from Spain, but Washington is his adopted hometown. Last February, he deepened those roots with the Bazaar by Jose Andres, a new Spanish restaurant within the glamorous Romanesque-style old post office building now Waldorf Astoria, Washington, D.C. The menu is more than 45 dishes, so if decision-making is hard, opt for the 13-course Bazaar Experience tasting menu. The trippy Farin Adria liquid olives, a gel-like sphere of olive juice that pops in your mouth, from Mr. Andres' days at the legendary now-closed restaurant El Bulli, are a highlight. Reservations recommended. Sunday, 9 a.m., breakfast of crab cakes. There are a few things more peak Washington on a Sunday morning than a trip to Eastern Market and Capitol Hill. This national landmark is one of the few historic public market buildings left in Washington, and the only one still operating. In its outdoor section, peruse fresh produce from area farmers like Agora Farms and Gardner's Gourmet, sold alongside vibrant artwork from the local painter Sharif Mamadou and the handcrafted cutting boards from Blue Ridge Cutting Board Company. Inside the market hall, get in line for the crab cakes Benedict at the market lunch food counter. It'll be worth the wait. There's a long communal bar table for dining. 11 a.m., Champion Women in Arts. The first major U.S. museum dedicated to female artists, the National Museum of Women in the Arts downtown Washington, reopened after a two-year renovation. The museum, in a former Masonic temple built in 1908, now offers expanded gallery space for more than 6,000 works by women and non-binary artists that span five centuries and six continents. Themed collections like Heavyweight, intended to dispel assumptions that female artists use more delicate materials than men, feature large sculptures like Chakaya Booker's Acid Rain, a textured work of shredded rubber tires and wood. The in-focus theme showcases women at the forefront of photography. There you'll find the Stop in Your Tracks, Bullets Revisited No. 3, a large-scale photo triptych by the Moroccan-American photographer Lala Essaidi, whose henna-covered model poses among thousands of golden bullet casings. Love hot air balloons? Join the crew. Millions flock to about 200 balloon festivals across the U.S. each year. Volunteering lets some fans pursue the inflatable dreams, by Stephen Moiti. When humans first soared in the air, it was not aboard an airplane. It was in a hot air balloon in 1783, 120 years before the Wright brothers' maiden flight. Since then, biplanes have evolved into jumbo jets, but the basic technology behind ballooning has hardly changed. Cloth, basket, burner, ballast, and ground crew. That's where devotees like Joanne Smith, 37, and Benjamin Brown, 41, come in. They have spent more than a decade traveling around the Southwest helping the pilot, Jonathan Wolf, 53, set up his fractal pattern balloon Infinitude, and then racing to meet it wherever the winds may carry it because balloons can't be steered. They and other volunteer crew members spend their spare time inflating, chasing, and packing up balloons, if they're lucky, scoring a little airtime along the way. Roughly 200 balloon festivals take place across the United States every year in all seasons. This means plenty of slots for volunteer crew members to hold the ropes, unfold the fabric, drive the chase car, and more. In most cases, all you have to do is show up, sign a liability waiver, and be ready to learn. Traffic jam in the sky. The alarm blared at 4 a.m., rousing me to join Mr. Wolf's volunteer crew on October 13th, day 7 of the 9-day Albuquerque International Balloon Fiesta, the largest balloon festival in the world. Organizers estimated that nearly 970,000 guests attended the event held at Balloon Fiesta Park, about 80,000 more than in 2018. Sunrise was still 2 hours away, but the field was teeming with people in the swatches of color that would soon become balloons. Balloonists start early so they can be ready for the pre-sunrise rite called Dawn Patrol, which experienced pilots take off in the darkness, their balloons illuminated like giant lanterns. Everybody kind of turns into a kid seeing all the balloons, all the colors, and everybody has a smile on their face when they're watching balloons, said Matt W. Guthrie, 62, a balloon pilot from Corrales, New Mexico. Mr. Wolf's crew, led by Mr. Brown, drove onto the field in a truck with the basket, balloon, and burner in the back and began to set up. Mr. Wolf, one of 629 pilots in the festival, headed to a weather briefing. Some of the 17 crew members managed the crowds gathering to watch. Others unfolded the balloon's envelope, fabric section that holds the air, on a tarp, installed the basket with the burner and propane tanks, and attached the envelope to the basket with metal and Kevlar cables. One of the festival coordinators gave Mr. Wolf the go-ahead to light the burner and fill the envelope with hot air. A loud whoosh, the balloon began to stand up, joining hundreds of others unfurling like giant flowers in the sunrise. "Today it's just going to be like a traffic jam in the sky," Mr. Wolf said. The crowd cheered and applauded as Mr. Wolf and two crew members lifted off. Then, armed with a radio and a GPS app, we piled into the truck. The chase was on. Catching the bug, some of the volunteers on Mr. Wolf's crew, who call themselves Skydies for their multicolored uniforms, had come to ballooning through family, but many of them had found it by chance. Ms. Smith was living in Rio Rancho, New Mexico, when one morning in 2003, her mother woke her and told her to go to the roof. A tie-dye pattern hot air balloon with a peace sign dangling from it was floating in the sky. About 4 years later, she met Mr. Brown at a house party and invited her to crew with him the next day. When she showed up, she met its pilot, Mr. Wolf. "Got out there once and I never left," she said. Since she started, Ms. Smith, who lives in Albuquerque, has traveled to crew around the Southwest as well as in Switzerland and Austria. Aims to crew in Mexico soon. Mr. Brown, a student pilot who works at a biomedical startup, is based in Albuquerque. He's been crewing for Mr. Wolf for about 17 years at festivals in places like Arizona, Utah, Colorado, and New Mexico. Gabby England, 31, another Skydies member, is a niece of Mr. Brown who invited her to do crew shifts with him. During a 2021 chase at the Red Rock Balloon Rally in Gallup, New Mexico, she got her chance to fly. It was a short trip, a hop when the pilot lands and quickly goes back up, usually to find a better landing area. Mr. Wolf, who was flying in some bluffs, landed briefly to drop off a passenger in an area that was not good for laying out the balloon. He asked Ms. England, who had been in a chase car, to join him for a hop. They found a good clearing, but the winds weren't cooperating. They landed too far from the service road, so Ms. England stepped out and used a rope to guide the balloon on foot to the nearest road. "I gotta walk the balloon like a dog," she recalled. First-timers are welcome. Typically, balloon pilots have 2 to 5 regular crew members, said Patrick Cannon, president of the Balloon Federation of America, an organization that manages and educates balloonists. "The United States has roughly 8,000 to 20,000 regular active crew members," Mr. Cannon added. "But many volunteers will crew only once in their life. The Federal Aviation Administration reported that 4,955 commercial pilots and 2,051 private pilots have balloon class ratings. Commercial pilots may carry paying passengers, while private pilots may carry non-paying passengers." Julie Grath, 37, and her father, David Hunt, 69, showed up on day six of the Albuquerque Festival, hoping to join a balloon crew for the first time. YouTube videos had piqued the interest of Mrs. Grath, an accounts receivable representative, and she brought along her father, who is a retiree and volunteer firefighter. They didn't have to wait long for their chance. Before we could finish signing up, there was a pilot that's like, "This is my site. Come on over when you're done," Mrs. Graff said. That pilot was Gregory Ashton, 61, from Meridian, Idaho, who was flying Montai the Black Sheep, a grinning member of the special shape category, which also included Yoda, a tiger, and a sunglasses-wearing saguaro cactus. Mr. Ashton put the pair to work right away, pulling out the balloon and inflating it, then had them coming back over the next 3 days. The day before the festival ended, Mr. Ashton surprised Mrs. Graff with an invitation to fly. In the basket, her main task was to watch out for other balloons in the sky. Any aircraft below them had the right of way. "We're going, going, going," Mrs. Graff said, and then Greg adjusts the height, and then we just, like, stop in the air. It's a very cool experience to just feel that change and just look at everything and look at the shadow of the balloons. Susan Van Campen, 65, a volunteer organizer at the festival, was helping recruit crew members at the stand where Mrs. Graff and Mr. Hunt had signed up. She handed anyone who expressed interest a sign-up sheet, a waiver, and booklets on safety and basic crewing tasks. Once the forms were signed, Mrs. Van Campen paired the volunteers with pilots. If they returned for more crew shifts, she said, she would provide them with a crew pass to attend the festival at no cost. The festival always needed more crew members, she said. A sparkling ending. Balloonists since the early days in France have a tradition of sharing a champagne toast at the end of a flight as a goodwill gesture to the owner of the landing site as well as to the crew. "There's a pretty big champagne budget for us," Mr. Brown said. After we had been chasing Mr. Wolf's fractal balloon for about an hour, he landed in a parking lot southwest of Balloon Fiesta Park. The team met him within minutes and quickly got to work disassembling and packing up the balloon. Mr. Wolf took a few champagne bottles out of the basket and prepared for the toast. He popped a cork into the air and a tie-dyed flurry of adults and children scrambled to catch it. A moment that symbolized why volunteers like Mr. Brown get so much out of working on a balloon crew. "Feels like being a kid," he said. "It feels like play more than I think maybe anything else in my life." Backtrack to one thing I overlooked. The key stops for Washington, D.C. The Wharf, Washington's rapidly changing waterfront area, overlooks the Potomac River and features a fish market, boutiques, restaurants, and music venues. Anacostia Community Museum highlights social issues within the Anacostia neighborhood and African-American neighborhoods around the country. It is part of the Smithsonian Institution, the world's biggest museum complex. Frederick Douglass National Historic Site, also called Cedar Hill, is the restored 19th century estate of the abolitionist and orator Frederick Douglass. The Bazaar by Jose Andres is the whimsical fine dining culmination of the Spanish chef's 30 years in Washington. All right, that's all the traveling time we have today. I'm Terry Marr, so long until next time.